Bonnie County, everyone. This is Professor Almond Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University, Long Beach Africana Studies Department, former city councilman for the city of Compton, former Compton College Board of Trustees, and former Compton Unified School District Board of Trustees, along with my co-host, historian Joe Hembrick, longtime educator for Linwood and administrator for Linwood Compton School District, and becoming the first head Black coach of football in Linwood Unified School District, as well as design a multicultural and unifying mural on the wall of Centennial, which we're going to show soon, and as well as just a person that said he got his education from Esawen bookstores and libraries throughout LA and other places, along with Brother Rashi Key, the host of our podcast, the Community Education Network, longtime educator, math teacher for Centennial High School, but longtime activist and developing consciousness and a platform by which we speak Black truth. We also want to welcome the good doctor, longtime employee for the state, I believe, as well as Brother Mashinda, who's in Louisiana, a longtime educator and conscious uplifter for the people. So we want to, first of all, thank everyone else who may chime in a little later. We're going to get to it. Today we have a very special guest and a very good friend of mine, and that is Sister Tori Bailey. Sister Tori Bailey is one of the unique individuals with a long history of community activism and community service from that standpoint. They say this about her, and when she was featured in this magazine about health, they said, Tori Bailey, while Ms. Bailey has been on the front lines and in the trenches for more than 10 years in Los Angeles area as a community servant, leader of health information, social justice, and other causes for the underserved, primarily in services planning in area SPA 6 and Council District CD10, Council District 10, Professor Bailey, as her students affectionately call her, when she was a post-private secondary college program chair of health information technology, went forth and became the co-founder of the Los Angeles Regional Homeless Restoration Advisory Coalition, acronym LARHRAC, along with Dr. Terrence Stone, who's now deceased. And not only that, we meet in General Assembly. I think she was on the board for the BCCLA, but Tori is one of the most well-connected persons in Los Angeles when it comes down to dealing with the issues that we are confronted with the people. There's very few people that's in politics or in social service that's not dealt with Tori on some level or heard of her. And she's just a wonderful person, a very high spirit, and she's been working with the homeless, counting the homeless, and doing various things with the homeless which she could share. So we're going to turn it over to Tori for an opening statement and conversation about the issues that we face dealing with homeless and in L.A. County. So Tori, go ahead.
Wow, after all that. Like, who is he speaking of? Well, I'm currently elected homelessness liaison for one of the neighborhood councils, one of the largest neighborhood councils in CD 10. Have been for the past 4 years elected. And then they reinstated me this go around. So I'm on my second term for elected homelessness liaison. Last week, Mayor Robert, I usually take somebody walking through the neighborhoods with me because you cannot see the things we see driving. So I took Mayor Robert Pullen Miles and the new deputy for City 10, Eric, and a neurologist, one of the doctors at LAC USC. So we all went walking, introducing ourselves, because if you're living on the street, 9 times out of 10, you're going to have some type of medical illness. And so that's what we came across this particular time. And it's not about what people think as far as being on drugs and alcohol. That may be preliminary, but it may not be at all. So what we came across this time was a gentleman who needed eye surgery. So he's already, scheduled and everything. And he's one of the ones that's been on the radar for the city to remove him from where he is. But I'm just hopeful. And that's why I bought in the council districts. Our goal for City 10 right now is to eradicate homelessness in that particular district. And there's enough units being built that can happen. Whether they choose to go to shelter, RV, safe parking, they're going somewhere other than this sidewalk. So that is our goal right now. That's you just wanted to open a statement, right, Professor Roth?
No, go ahead. Give up your experiences, what's going on with the homeless, and then you can say about Black people and homeless.
Well, it's so much. I think there's a disproportionate leadership roles in homelessness in the agencies that are actually making the decisions because, as always, we're leading the numbers. The count for 2022 that we did this year that I normally would do at Holman, we had to do under the planes at USC right there, Figueroa, which is not how I normally operate. We usually have about 200 volunteers. This time we only had about 50, but we got it done. And so the city institutes a tracks of maps that we have to count and stay within the parameters and boundaries of the map. So we always get 100% of our maps done. Except for this time, we had a new council district that was added on, and they came to help, bless their heart, but they really weren't familiar with how to really do it. And so they came back with a partial count on their end. So hopefully I asked them to do it the next day and finish it up and turn it back in. And they said that was done, but, unverifiable to me. So from January, February this year, the count results just came out September 8th. So as it stands, it states that we have 79,000 plus in the county and 42,000 plus in the city. I have yet to figure out how they're boundary setting, the city from the county with these numbers. So that's the next thing that I plan to look at with LASA. And LASA is the Los Angeles Homeless Service Authority. You can always go online and look at the maps and the charts and all the numbers within your area or within the county or within the city that they have on their website. The website is lahsa.org. So LASA.org, and you can learn a lot off of that website. But I personally, if they say 79,000, I'm going to add at least 20 more thousand to that, 10 to 20 more thousand, because you're not counting those who are living with friends on couches, in those areas that you can't see when you're outside counting in the dark. So there's a lot more than what we know, but those are the ones that are just visible on the night of the count, which is three nights, by the way. We only do it one night in our area, and then like Culver City and different areas do it on the other nights. So it's always three nights though. So for the past 5 years or so, there's been like a 32% increase. So why is that? Because during the pandemic, there should have been, well, there was a moratorium, but not all landlords were complying with the moratorium, right? So if you guys have any questions, feel free to raise your hand at any given time, because there is many facets and many levels and layers to this. So I'm just trying to give a brief overview of what a lot of people have been discussing. Now, LASA is the distributor of the funds. They have a new acting CEO. His name is Stephen Simon. He's very new. But then there's another CEO, Christina Dixon, which they were co-CEOs, and another lady by the name of Molly Roisman. Now, I'm still also trying to figure out how. It's so much, and it gets a bit emotional because I work directly with the people. And so we know their behaviorisms, their habits, whether they're schizophrenic, paranoid, whether they're on drugs, off drugs, or whether they are violent or they're destructive. So every month I do a call, a city call, and it was recorded through the city. So some landlords are on there, and I have to convince them that there's many other ways to accept someone on their property. And one way that I had suggested was that we give a letter to advocate for those who have their vouchers and for those who don't give you any problems throughout the years, right? So, but that's a gap that's in the system that we have presently. So right now they're randomly pulling people out of this system. It's called a CES system. It was a coordinated entry system, which all the agencies are to be using, but it's not letting the landlord giving them the insight, you know, of does this person really want to live on their own? Just because they're in that system don't mean they have the capacity to live by themselves. So that's one thing that we're not taking into consideration. So a lot of landlords, when they say there's a shortage of units, there is no shortage. There's just a lot of landlords who will not accept Section 8. They will not accept them onto their property as a tenant. So that's part of the problem. So that's where I come in to try to convince them that everyone doesn't fall into the property damage category. They just don't. But they got to start asking questions before they allow. I mean, I got to teach them how to ask the right questions, or either allow the city and county to add a step into the process that they can have an advocate that will write a letter for them on their behaviorisms, you know, if they've been around them for more than a year or so. So that's just something that I'm working on now. Have about 60 women I'm working directly with almost on a daily basis. And it is more than a notion, you know, because we're dealing directly with them. And sometimes some of them are talking to five different people in their head and And you have to learn how to disassociate yourself from them, not believing that they're talking to you personally. And I find that a lot of people do not know how to separate that. So it has to take a special person, a special mindset to be able to deal with some of the behaviors that come along with this post-traumatic stress that they have from sleeping outside, from being attacked, from being whatever happened in childhood. One girl came to me and said she's never had parents. So by the age of 8, she was on her own, 8 years old. But still, she's in this place now. She has her own room and comfort, her own television, air conditioning, everything. She gets up every morning with a smile on her face and goes out and does what she does every morning. Some of them actually have jobs. But right now, they're in interim housing, waiting on permanent housing. I'm going to stop right there for a second and see if anyone has any questions regarding homelessness. And
may I ask one question, please?
Yes.
What about the churches? Are the pastors, are you all working with them? Are the community leaders?
Well, yeah, our associate pastor was supposed to go out on the walk with us, but they were in the midst of doing this funeral, so he got stuck doing that. But I always make a point to take out a pastor. I've taken out about 3-4 pastors so far that actually go out and know what to do, pray, whatever they need to do. I created a shower day on La Brea. We did right before the pandemic, La Brea and Adams. And so they were able to take showers.
Just one other question, please. One other question. Since you mentioned the children, what about reaching out to the administrators at the schools? Maybe they can come out with you, like the principals, assistant principals, or maybe even the counselors.
That's a thought. You know, every school. Now, that's where we need people to help us in the community, because every school with LAUSD has a data field that has homelessness, right? So when I was working at a school for LAUSD, that's when I really discovered how they were tracking their homeless students. I'm like, oh my God. And one of the students that would come at my desk every day, almost, she was one of them. You would have never known that, though. And so what I did was went to all the business owners up and down. And this was in off of North Broadway. Whether they spoke English or not, they understood what I was saying, because I speak enough Spanish for them to get the point through. So I went to the different businesses up and down Broadway and asked them to contribute and help these families for Thanksgiving and Christmas. And they did. And come to find out, they were familiar with some of the families, but they didn't know they were homeless either. So it's a matter of communication and opening up communication for people to realize that they can help do something. But to go, we got to get people off these sidewalks, out of the parks.
Okay. I have a question. First of all, thanks for being here. I appreciate you being here speaking with us. And now I know back before, I think it was Proposition 10, I think we had institutions like Norwalk and other places that dealt with a lot of people that had schizophrenia and these different. So now, with a lot of mental illness. So when they took that away, did most of those people go to the street?
Yes, but guess what? We keep passing on this same story, right? They haven't taken them. They haven't taken away. They took them away in the manner in which you think, where they were like institutionalized, but they still have them. I was just looking at the whole list day before yesterday. And I was like, people keep repeating it, but not doing the research to see if they exist. So when I was teaching professor out in the valley, I would take my students to these different places, right? And I intentionally took them to the mental health facilities. And one was a locked facility. And they were frightened, of course, but I just taught them how to relax because, you know, around different people with different mental illnesses. One of them, we walked in, we was approached with a guy who thought he was Muhammad Ali, you know, and so you have to understand and talk to them in the manner in which they think. And so they do exist. There's a lot in the valley for sure. And then over here, they have the one by Drew Steele, and they have, it's quite a few. So, even the, go ahead.
Okay, so Norwalk was a huge facility. Is there places like that that's that huge where those people could benefit from the services?
I don't think there's one that big, but they still, what's the one? The one, because I just had someone take their brother there on 120th across from Drew.
Yeah, I know this, but that's Augustus Hawkins.
Augustus Hawkins, right.
Yes.
They accept them early in the morning, and they do the assessment and evaluation, and they supposed to forward them for there. But right now, oh, God, what we've been having to do, which I totally disagree with, right now, we have to call the police department first, who comes out and they call it an assessment. It's three questions. If the person communicates with them, then they do not call it's called MEU, the Mental Evaluation Unit, which is supposed to go more in depth on their mental behavior. Well, individuals aren't supposed to call them directly to get help. They have to set that part set up for the police department first. But see, there's other numbers. Like if anybody calls me in the community and asks me for a...
You're on mute, Ms. Bailey.
Oh, no, it didn't mute. A call came and I had to decline it. Sorry about that. If they call me, I give them a totally different number. And this number, they supposed to come out, evaluate the situation. And usually they will take them and keep them for about 3 days. And they come back totally different in their mannerisms and their behaviorisms and their politeness. But eventually you got to learn what triggers them. You have to learn what triggers some of this behavior. And then not be fearful. And that's what I'm saying. We can't be fearful of our own people. And that's what I keep explaining to everyone. Try not to call police first, unless you explain the situation on the phone before they get there. And the main thing is let them know there are no weapons. If there are no weapons, you know what I mean? So we don't want any unnecessary casualties. So there's a lot to take in consideration. So I get a lot of phone calls from the CD10 area, the West Adams area. And then I kind of try to explain and get them to help with doing some of the reporting. There's another website called LA Hops, LAHOPS. That's another site that I would like the community to familiarize themselves with so they can call sometime or communicate with me that you did call, you know, so we don't overlap a lot. But it's a lot now. And then passed this RV ordinance lately, too. But they're not going to be able to do anything with that because there's only one company in this city that has the capacity to even break down a motorhome to be able to tow it anywhere anyway. So that's a mute point. And they should stop giving these tickets to all of them because they can't pay them. They just cannot. So they need to focus on the people lying in the street. Focus on getting them housed, those that want to be. Those that don't want to be, they have to come up with an alternative. because some of them are fearful to go in the four walls. And one of the girls told me this herself. She had become a counselor, but she said she was so frightened to be inside for a while until she learned how to deal with it. And she said now she loves it. So it's a matter of what are they going through at this moment that they don't want to be housed, you know? Some of them just don't want to obey any rules. But right now they have the low barrier interim housing where they can come and go when they please. They just don't have a key to their room. But so someone has to let them in. So you're able to see what's happening with them at that point too. But there's a lot of the mental health, get back to your question, there's a lot of mental health facilities still open. There are.
In okay. Terms of,
go ahead.
Thanks a lot. Sister Making It Happen, she had a question.
Good evening, everyone. Greetings, family. And so happy to see my sister here that you guys have connected with. It's always awesome when great people meet up. So how you doing?
So, how you doing?
I'm doing much better now that I see you. So it's a blessing. What a surprise. What a nice surprise, right? There's so many questions. I think one of the first things that I want to say, so schools do have a system. I'm an educator. I work with one of the local unified school districts, and we do have the McKinney-Vento program. And I was the foster youth and the McKinney-Vento counselor for a minute. So, you know, it was great at that point, but things definitely have changed. There have been a lot of changes within the last 7 years or so, even for that program. And I know, like you said, schools have a tracking system. They should all be utilizing the McKinney-Vento funds they get, which are federal funds for homeless families to provide resources to the children. And then I agree with you, Sora, that it's about the relationships and getting these families and to open up to you. Because a lot of times, you know, what our issues, our mental health issues, our pride, all these issues, we don't share what's really happening, you know, in our community. We like to say, I'm all right. And then you're on fire, but you're all right. No, you're not all right. You burned. So I think that's a post-slavery syndrome that we want to say everything's okay. Because we just, you know, we have a lot of post-slavery syndromes that we don't realize. So that word okay, I'm okay, when we're really not, where we're hurting and pain, you know. So making sure to really work with the families at the site, I think it's important that the schools, that everybody who has access to children communicate, you know. One of the things I ask the students is, does your mother have her own kitchen? Can she cook in her own kitchen? You know, that means indication. If your mama can't cook in her own kitchen and you're sharing space, that's an indication to me that you're maybe, you know, housing compromised, you know. So talking to the kids, building relationships with the family so there's trust, so that they can open up when there's a need, so that the services that are available, that are have trickled down, that are sitting, can be utilized for those that need it. But I wanted to ask about, you know, I'm one of the founders of Black Women for Wellness, so I bring that up in everything that I do. But have you, is there any kind of partnership with Black Women for Wellness, or any kind of missions or campaigns that they're working on for women that may be in need of housing?
Not that I know of. And then when it comes to those children and adults, you have to be careful about their privacy.
Yes.
And because, you know, children and adults can be cruel. And they find out you're homeless. Oh, my God. You know, who knows what will happen. So if you have an inkling of an indication that you think that may be the case, always, you know, make a point to talk to the parent and see if they need any resources. And you can check, you know, indirectly with how's the child doing, you know how to do that.
Yes, ma'am. And it's so just the other
people, right. And now as far as the housing, there, what the system that they have in place now, like I said, most of them that are in the project room keys, the project home keys, the interim housing programs that you hear on the news are in a database called Coordinated Entry System. And they're selecting people that are in there. And so when they're in these particular places, the goal is to find permanent housing.
Yes.
But again, I'm going to give you the 60 or so that I work directly with. There's probably about 25 that cannot live on their own yet.
Absolutely.
No way. There is no way. They have to have some counseling, some daily living courses, some I don't live on the street anymore mentality courses. I mean, I'm literally, if I didn't see it with my own eyes, this girl has her own apartment. She pays rent for it, or somebody pays for it. It was raining hard. She still went outside to go sleep in the tent.
Wow.
And I didn't know who she was, but everybody was telling me she's going outside. So then I would say, oh, make light of it, say, you sure you don't want to stay in here where it's nice and dry? Or, I say something to think it would trigger. And I'm usually pretty good at getting them to think about it at least. She went outside in that rain. I said, ooh, okay. Hopefully you'll come right back when you get wet, okay? you have to say something that won't trigger them to angry. I didn't know her behaviorism as well as some of the others. So I didn't know what would trigger her and what wouldn't. But just the fact that she wanted to go back outside in the rain when she has a nice, warm apartment, I have yet to figure that one out. But that's just how strong some of these strongholds are over their mind.
Yeah, it's funny say that because I have a family member that we would attempt to bring in and clean up.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked for a little while, but eventually it, like you said, there's a call or pull or something or mm-hmm. whatever the feeling is that they just need to be out there. So it is, mm-hmm. And for the family yeah. members, it's difficult, but I wanted to make sure that I sit in this group about the liaisons that are at each school. So as you're, mm-hmm, looking for these connections to communicate, and then specifically now with after the pandemic, the year and a half of all this, you mm-hmm. now have these Black student achievement programs at these schools with these contact people, mm-hmm. Providing services. So those may be some contacts for your organization, for you while you're out there, either their mm-hmm. Kenny Vento liaison or their Black Parent Achievement or Advisory contact in terms of being able to share information. They're doing monthly meetings with families and just to be able to communicate what's available.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, yeah, the main thing, thank you. The main thing is the availability of a room, a landlord willing to give it a try. That's the main thing right now is to make a unit available. Well, many are going up. All these units you see going up, all these apartments you see going up, they are supposed to have an allotment of at least 10% for very low income. But who's holding them accountable? Who's monitoring that? So that's another thing we need to look into. That's one of the things I plan to look into. I went to one of the new buildings day before yesterday, and they told me they had 6 units available for very low income. But see, you have to keep in mind, there's tables of affordability. So when you say affordable, that could range from the area median income of affordability. It could arrange for a high income. Affordability is what? is irrelevant. You got to know what that means. It's so broad. You got to know what is the very income table you're looking at. Are they only paying 30% of the income that they have, even if they only get that $200 a month? Right? So you got to know what that means. When they say affordable housing, really, what does that mean? That could be $4,000 a month if you're making an income of six figures or more. So, right? So yes. We can't allow the language to disparage us. You can't allow that. You have to not repeat that we don't have enough housing. We do. We can't be disparaged enough to say we don't have enough mental health facilities. We do. It's just a matter of us utilizing what exists.
Sister, now, I have another question. What about the transitional housing? How does that fall into the equation?
That's the same. That transitional housing is, well, I send some people to an agency. Sometimes they give them transitional housing the same day. Transitional housing is, you're only there for, it's supposed to be a short period of time. You're supposed to be transitioning into permanent housing again. And it worked out for somebody, a couple of people helped last year, but you have to get up, be there in line, 6:30 in the morning, be one of the first 10, and they get you into somewhere that day. So then the one guy I sent lately, he ended up with a duplex. He's in it. He got one side of a duplex to himself now, but he helped work the system. You know, you got to help and let them know that you're ready. You're ready to be in your own place and get the help that you need. And then people that are willing to house, they have subsidies that will help you house certain groups of people. So it's a lot of things that can be done. It's just a matter of us activating it, letting people know what's out there. And like I said, I gave you the website to look at LASA. Look through all of that. Learn how to, like, if you run across somebody that you see in your neighborhood every day, and they never had any resources, you can put them in the system and somebody follows up to visit with them and see what the resources are that they need. Professor Ra, I cannot see all the hands. Are there any more hands or anyone more questions?
Yeah, we're going to go with Mashinda.
Okay. Mashinda.
Mashinda, are you there?
Yeah. Good evening.
Good evening.
Yeah, I'm just taking it all in. You being on the front line, I commend you. You know, it's a tough effort, and you know, I just commend you for that. I was just wondering, are there any model cities or counties or states in the United States that you know of that is combating homelessness that's working, or maybe, you know, somewhat, you know, have a higher batting average than most? Are you familiar with any?
Well, you know, anytime I go out of the state, I look around, see what's what. I went to, what was it, Reno, I guess, last year. And they have this whole community that they set up. And it has one, like, community room where someone cooks for them and everything, and they come through and get their food. But they have like individual little tiny houses. It's really, really cool. I said, oh, that's neat. So I wish, you know, but see, LA is really no comparison unless you're looking at New York or Florida or another large state like ours. We've really allowed this to get out of hand. And the drug epidemic and all of that we've gone through did not help the situation. And so it can work here. supposedly, let me see, in 2021, they said there was 21,213 placements. But see, they're not telling you how many were displaced in the process. Because again, that's during the pandemic. A lot of people, whether it was a moratorium or not, were still being evicted. That was prior to them allowing the landlord to do the paperwork to get paid, right? So even though they had the 21,000 placements, how many were displaced? So if we still reporting 79,000 unhoused, wow. You know it's more than that.
Are there any changes in the Section 8 rules, like as it relates to income? I know that, you know, people that aspire to maybe try to get a Section 8 home, you know, there's a certain income level. I know you talked about the tables. So, I mean, yeah. has there been any, you know, increase, like, you know, at first giving people a chance to get in a, you know, if it's a dollar more or $10, you know, allowing people to make 40,000 or 10,000. Well, of course not. You know, I'm just saying $6,000. You know,
supposedly they have revamped the Section 8 process. So right. Now I know that they were giving emergency Section 8 vouchers to those that were in some type of interim housing project, room key. Project Home Key program, right? So October 15th, Section 8, for the first time in 5 years, is supposed to open up again. They had so many people that applied 5 years ago, and I think they only gave out 20,000. So I have to double check those numbers, but you can look up what the revamped Section 8. But it's definitely opening up October 15th. So if there's anybody you know that's homeless or you see somebody in your neighborhood, let them know that it's opening up for everyone. And so that would be a good thing right there so we could see. But again, we have to work on the landlords.
They're tough. Okay.
You know? And until they implement that step that I'm talking about is missing, and they randomly pulling people out of this system, it's a hit and miss. And that's what some of the landlords are afraid of. But if they would just allow the advocates or the coordinators to give their recommendations, they would be a lot better off. And if they would just get some counseling and psychiatric assistance on a more consistent basis for those who are hearing the voices and seeing the people that traumatized them when they were younger, maybe they can get them some help, you know, because right now I just don't see them being able to maintain a home by themselves. It'd be very difficult.
Go ahead. Do any of these particular individuals qualify for residential facilities for disabled adults?
Oh, that would be something to look into. I mean, I'd have to. Well, I usually make it a habit to visit any place I refer somebody to. So. Absolutely. But that would be good. If you can identify three of them places, we'll go visit them.
But I think the issue is...
I can see if some of them would qualify to be in a place like that, because that would be an alternative to going back on the street.
Because my husband and I are working on residential facilities, and there's a group of people that are providing that service in our community. And okay. So, but I do understand that some of these have to be regional center clients.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure how that fits into the scheme of things, but wanted to kind of add that in to the equation.
Well, I, right now, unless they're a case manager or whoever is working with them directly knows of the facility and the facility's on a list that they can know about it, then that's the only way I can see that it's going to happen. You know, if you're on a list that they use, like a listserv, you get in the database as one of the options, then that's a possibility. Because I'm going to tell you, there's always going to be some that just not ready to live by themselves yet.
Right. Absolutely. Thank you.
You're welcome. Let me know if we want to get with the agencies and add your business onto the list.
Yes, ma'am. We'll do.
Okay. And you can get my number from Professor Ra, or I can put it in the chat, however you want it, or I can say it and you write it.
Well, if it's the same, then I probably still have it unless you changed it.
No, I haven't changed. It's been the same since cell phones been invented.
Okay, Mashinda, did you have any other questions? All right. Good doctor.
So we understand it. You said the issues are the landlords. That's the main issue with the Section 8?
That's one of the primary issues, that they have tried it. Their property has been damaged and they're just afraid to do it again. But I'm suggesting that we get around that by getting a letter of from an advocate or a case manager on their behaviorisms, you know?
Okay. And you stated that there's enough housing available mm-hmm. to house mm-hmm. everyone, and there's mm-hmm. enough mental service to, you know, help everyone out there right now. And what? So, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just trying to clarify. You said to house them right now?
I think you said earlier, you said there's enough housing available to house
everybody. It is. Right? It is.
Okay. And you mentioned that with the mental issue, too. There's enough help or something for everyone out there. I just want to just...
Well, everyone who wants help. Okay. Who wants help. Everyone keeps saying that Reagan shut down all the mental health facilities. But if you Google mental health facilities right now in California or Los Angeles, well, California, South Los Angeles, however you want to do it, you will get a list of organizations that are mental health facilities. Now, where you're going to house them or not is another story. Well, they can definitely get assistance. And there is no such thing as everyone wanting to get help.
Correct. A couple more questions. Just one question. I'm not in LA County or LA.
Oh, where are you?
I'm in Riverside County.
Oh, okay.
My question was, I watched the mayor thing about a week ago. Any preference? I don't know if you're allowed to say that. You have a preference. But I'm hearing their ideals about homelessness. Do you have preference on whose ideal is better or work? Because I'm just hearing the male, the guy, I don't know his name.
Caruso? Are you talking about Caruso?
Yeah, he said something like 30,000, 60,000 homes or 30,000 homes in 30 days or something, or 60 days. Is that feasible? And I know Bass, no Karen Bass.
It's feasible for him.
Because
he can use his own money. He doesn't have to relegate, you know, the red tape as much. You know, he can get permits.
Okay.
If he can build the Grove, he can build anything else.
So that's possible.
It's possible.
Okay.
And if he has the land, the land already identified and the unit designs and the architectural designs and the permits that he needs to get. Yeah, anything's possible if you're determined to do it.
And it's been a while since I remember I was out there about 15, 20 years ago, and I'm familiar with the family shelters they used to have. I don't know if they still have. I just remember the one in North Hollywood off of Lancashire, the big family shelter. They are those still in operation, working?
They have shelters for families as far as few and in between, but I usually refer families to this place called Shields for Families, because most of the people I'm dealing with are individuals.
Okay, that's it.
Yeah, they okay. That's thank you.
All right.
Yeah, they have. Go ahead,
Brother Joe.
Hey, it's doing. Yeah, evening, Sister Tori. How you doing?
Good evening. How are you?
I appreciate your presentation. I dealt in that area when I was working. I'm retired now, but when I was at working the schools, that was something that I dealt with. I would have my secretary to the counselors and try to target as many homeless.
Oh, you used to work in the school district?
I worked at Centennial for about 20 years.
Oh, really? Did they have the homeless database then?
I don't. They had that program that was mentioned earlier, that system Make It Happen.
Oh, that's what they had when you were there?
That, and then for a couple of years, we had a social worker on campus. That didn't last long. Me and another elderly sister tried to get the mental health services to the kids, but I would have my secretary get with the counselors and see how many of them there were. And we would try to help them, like, with, you know, a different student act, like buying yearbooks, buying prom.
Right. Oh, that was good.
Yeah, he always bought suits and all that stuff for kids that didn't have Thanksgiving dinners and all of the old nine. Anyway, my question is, I read an article in the Times last week or the week before about HUD. And I believe they said $130 million was returned to the federal government that could have been used for the homeless situation in Montgomery County. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, that's what I don't get me started, because that gets me to the point where, wow.
And then
if they would just have, there are processes that they could have easily at least cut the numbers in half. You know what I'm saying? Or what they're reporting. If they would just separate those who want to be housed from those who don't, we could make some leeway. But like I said, the way the system is set up now, they just put everybody in this one system database and give random, you know, have random selection to the landlords out of this same database. But that doesn't help you know who's going to cause the damage to your units or not, unless the landlords are asking these questions up front. And then I have a feeling that they're not giving full disclosure. Otherwise, that wouldn't be happening. But they have a program at LOC right now for the boys that helps with buying suits for different occasions, taking them out to dinner, showing them how to conduct themselves with business. It's a good program.
Yeah, I'm a landlord also.
Now, what's your feeling about Section 8?
I've had Section 8 clients. Actually, two of my renters now started out as Section 8, but they grew out of it.
And that's the goal. You would hope that that would be the ultimate goal.
You know, I still have them as tenants. And one of my former players is one of the directors of Shields and Family. You know, a gentleman by the name of Patrick Kennedy?
Oh, okay. I probably met him, I'm sure, but I haven't lately seen anybody these 3 years. I just stay right here in the area, you know, to try to help the homeless that's on the street. And I just do refer to them. Patrick Kennedy is the CEO now.
I don't know what he is now, but I know he works for Shields and Families. He used to be right there on El Segundo and Avalon, right there behind Burger King. That's where the facility used to be.
Yeah, there's one off of Western and across from Southwest College also.
You know what I found? The problem I have with Section 8 is dealing with these case managers, man. You can't get them on the phone. It's just ridiculous trying to communicate with those people. But I tell all landlords, like, you know, if you're a landlord and you're seeking out Section 8 people, you know, you can interview them, you can do certain background checks and whatnot, and then what you said about the letter of reference and whatnot, you know, there's a way to, you know, cipher out the ones that's going to tear up your property. And I tell people, if you, you know, people with small kids, you know, target because of small kids, I mean, like, you know, what can a kid do? If you got teenagers, it's kind of tough because you're moving into a strange neighborhood, you got the gang thing and all
right.
that. But
right. So when you were dealing with Section 8, your tenants did not come from the CES system, or they did?
I wasn't even aware of that system. They came from Section 8 department. We call it HAP or something like that.
Oh, okay. They came straight through them. Okay. Well, it's a little different now. I'm sure there could be some exceptions. But I would just, hopefully you'll encourage, you know, landlords to show them the process that you went through, that, that you were able to communicate with them and select, you know, who you wanted to be in your unit. At least it would be wise to at least be able to have a conversation up front, you know?
Well, you know, you run across, had a big changeover of inspectors. And, you know, they were pushing a certain ethnic group, you know, like if you didn't have...
Right. That's been happening too. So they figured that this CES system is a fair way to distribute the units, but it needs another layer of programming.
I agree. All right.
Yeah. I appreciate you guys and the questions. Yes.
Yeah. I appreciate what's been said, if I understand correctly. Tori, again, we want to say Asante Silent for you being here and your courageous work you've been doing, not just with the homeless, but with social justice, women issues, every issue that affects us as Black people. I know you've been on the front line with BCCLA and other organizations. I have just a few quick questions. And hopefully that we can get, you know, they passed a lot of bonds, state, county, and city bond to deal with homeless. They told the people they was going to deal with the homeless, that this was for the homeless. And then at the same time, when the money come, seemed like we don't see it. I mean, we don't see an impact of those bonds. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, there's going to be a few on the ballot in November. One is, hopefully you read up on the ULA. There's one that says, let me see. There's two measures, a ULA and SP. One is a $1.1 billion property tax increase. And there's another one that a city hall is saying is, there's another one that on my talk, that on my meeting that I have the last Thursday of the month, there's going to be a gentleman talking about one of the Senate bills that's going to be on the ballot. So there's a couple of things that deal with that are supposed to be addressing the homelessness issues again with tax increases. And so I don't know if that's the right way to go, if we're returning all these millions of dollars back when we could have been using the money that we had allocated to us initially. It's just not making sense. So hopefully you'll read up on these measures before you vote. I have two different, you got conflicting messaging, of course. On these measures of the ULA, it says one says a new approach to reduce homelessness and protect low-income seniors. And then on the other hand, it says no on ULA and talks about the inflation raging at 9.5% a year. We should not raise any property taxes, but make it more expensive to live in LA. So I don't know. We need to look at ULA. No, look at that measure.
I was talking about the past bonds. But you know, I can imagine. But let me get to the next question. Many people when it comes down to that, going back to what Machinda was asking, is there a national data bank or national organization, because of the diversity of homelessness in different regions, South, Northeast, urban, rural, those type of things. Is there a national database on homelessness? I know the federal government talks about it. Is there a national association or organization that looks at homeless from a national standpoint?
That's supposed to be the homelessness division that's affiliated with our capital, with the U.S., with the White House. They are supposed to have access to the state databases, you know, per state, where they feed and funnel information to them. That's how they know how much money to allocate per state for homelessness. Mm-hmm. But again, if we're not utilizing it and putting a process in place, I don't know what happened to the federal judge that came down and said there was a mandate for them to do such things when it came to homelessness. But I haven't heard anything about him lately. I'm going to have to look it up and see what happened. But we did have a federal judge that came to California in particular to see what is the problem, you know, what is going on here? And he mandated for us to do certain things. But
what they were saying, okay, you answered that. Let me get to this other question. They passed something in Los Angeles and in LA County that homeowners could use, convert their garages or use their property to have a tiny house built for the homeless. Are you familiar with any of that?
Yes, they're ADUs. They're called ADUs, accessory dwelling units.
Mm-hmm.
And I've taken a few people on tours to those because we have a couple here in the neighborhood that are on display to encourage people to convert their garages. And matter of fact, I just went to another one last week and it is really nice. And it's just your average garage. They did not knock down any walls, but you should see how they designed it and how it's put together. And if you're interested in going by, let me know and I'll take you by one or two of them. But yeah, I'm quite aware of those. Mm-hmm. And it's just
A matter of how they don't. Are you familiar with how many people are doing it or participating in the program?
I don't know okay. Because you have about 5-6 different companies doing them, plus you have your private architects and contractors doing them for people unpermitted. You know, there's a lot going on right now with that. But once they find out, I guess it's added on and it increases your property value. And you got to see how much property tax increase that's going to create. So I'm trying to see how that's working for people. But you can definitely rent them out.
What about the people that, the legislation that they were trying to push in Los Angeles, that big rooms in a hotel, they can use it, or the government can just take it, just move them in, and people the hotel people are trying to stop it, and they say it affect tourism, especially high end hotel.
That was I don't know what happened with that, but we do have a case with the Mayfair Hotel in particular. They supposedly just sold it for like $60 million, but they had it as interim housing. So then from what I understand, everybody had to get out of there. They put some of the people in some of the local interim housing project room key programs. And hopefully nobody fell through the cracks on that one. But I did see where it had happened last year to a couple of the ladies because they didn't realize they really had to get out because the program was ending. But those hotels, I I just don't see that passing where you're going to have homeless in at the same time you have tourists in. So if I don't see that totally passing through. It's not totally passed yet.
Okay.
The next I don't see it.
The next question is there are a lot, what happened in Venice Beach when the people were living on the beach and the sheriff came in and swept them out. And they said some of them are coming back. The other thing is the movement to move people, homeless people out of parks and homeless encampment out of parks and being close to schools. What is the position on dealing with that? Because there's a number of homeless camps by schools.
Yeah.
And
there's a law about the radius, the distance of the homeless, and they can be moved by LAPD or sheriffs. But that situation that happened on the beach, when I was a vice president of one of the Democratic clubs, the councilman came and talked to us about that. Now, that's Council Member Bonin. He had a plan that he was working on, but then sheriffs came in and kind of railroaded the situation, and they are still dealing with the ramifications of that. So, that was a battle between council members, city, and sheriffs, who just basically took matters in their own hand, and they should have never done that, because that is not private property.
Yeah, what seems to be an issue is that the homeless encampments, some are organized,
right?
And some create a health problem. Where they use the restroom, where they throw their trash, and right. Then you got people who consider these campers as not being on the street, but living in a camper, but all their junk, all their possessions on the outside,
right. Right.
Accumulate and accumulate. How are they dealing with that? Because it seems as if the homeless situation is a broad one. You got veterans.
It is.
Who live there because they're used, they're trained how to make it. You got some people got tents that are better than homes. They got a television, they got heaters, they got everything in them. You're living up in the passage, but they're veterans or people that have been on homeless a long time. I mean, you're talking about some people that have been on the streets for 20, 30 years.
Yes, and that's a whole nother situation. A lot of the veterans need advocates themselves. And I'm starting to work with this group that works with veterans because they don't even have their full benefits that they should have when they were exited from the military, when they retired from the military, et cetera, et cetera. So they need advocates to speak for them on their behalf to get their 100% or their 75% benefits that packages that they were supposed to have. And you'd be surprised how many don't have it yet. So that's I have two different organizations now that's helping with that endeavor. And so that in turn will get their GI Bill so they can get their housing. So that's a whole nother story. But there are places that are helping house the veterans. And I don't know if you ever traveled down San Vicente and took that curve over just by the VA to see how many veterans was homeless outside the gates. Oh my God. So finally you got the news media out there and they moved them all inside the gate
which wasn't conducive for some of their mentalities, their mental behavior, because then they had these rules they had to abide by, and they still technically were not housed. They were slowly but surely trying to house them. And you know, they had space. So that's a whole nother story with the veterans, but they are attempting to house them a lot quicker now.
And then there's people that, you know, they don't want to stay in the missions because of the rules. You know, they can, you know, you can't smoke, can't do this. You know.
Right.
And the same thing with the apartment renting. Most people get into ownership of apartments to make money.
Right. And right.
Most people don't like to deal, as historian Hemrick was saying, with Section 8 because of the government regulations and requirements, inspections to qualify your property for Section 8.
Right.
The other thing is that when you start talking about even people who rent a gentrification, you got people coming in paying high rent, but and housing going up. The whole cost of housing and rent is skyrocketing, and now you can move people in and let it be cheaper, but that whole atmosphere around there.
Yeah, but that's where the subsidies come in, and that's what I was saying about advocating and giving the letter of intent or recommendation for them. Depends on who they are, because they can take care. Some of them clean a house better than you can ever think of, but and some of them love to clean, love to take showers. They just love it. But you got it. We got to get out of that mentality that just because they were in this particular predicament, that they are going to cause havoc. They're not. I talked to one girl yesterday. Her family took a property from her that she's supposed to inherit, which was worth $2.7 million. So she's trying to figure out, she's homeless because her mom passed, or parent passed, or what have you. But there's different situations, different scenarios for different things. And we got to understand that and stop being judgmental and help the situation. Now, as far as those RVs are concerned, they were getting tickets on top of tickets on top of tickets, and the media kept interviewing them and saying, well, this is, I have all these tickets, but I have no way to pay them. So why don't they, you know, what, like I said earlier, there's nothing, they can't tow those RVs. There's a special way to tow them, and there's only one service that they've identified so far that has that capacity. And it, I don't know where all these RVs came from, but they just everywhere now. But yeah. I think you need to leave those RV people alone and get these people off the street first.
Well, that's the challenge, because some people want to stay on the streets. And as you said, the girl wanted to go back in the rain. The issue is there an anti-homeless sentiment that you've been picking up?
Yes. Yes.
And
but we need to those that do not, now that's what they need to come up with. What will you do with those who do not wish to be put in some housing? I say get a piece of land. It's not like the city and county do not have access or have land available. I mean, there's things, there's buildings like the old women's center, the hospital on LAC USC's campus is empty. So there are many buildings that are empty. So why aren't we utilizing these properties and these buildings that can house hundreds of people temporarily while they're being counseled or case managers, resources, or something to help them get on their feet?
Yeah, but see, there's a sterile perspective of homelessness, because as you're part of the counting of the homeless, if I'm
right. Honest. Right. Yeah.
But do you collect data on it as far as crime rate, violence, the ones that have mental problems separated from the ones that don't? I mean, what does that counting sheet look like? Does it really get all the data, or it's just head count?
Well, right now, what I'd like to suggest is that each of you that's on the call, go into that website and look at it. Look at all the data that has been gathered so far. And then let's come up with some questions and solutions that we can offer to Lhasa. Sit down with this new CEO who they have in place right now. And that's another issue that I have with the structure of these agencies. They need to mirror the people that are homeless. They need to understand the culture. They need to understand. I can give you an example. One of the girls was really, really having a bad day Friday. And so I had to deal with her. And I'm okay dealing with her. But if she decides to pick up a chair or something, that's a whole nother story. But she was talking out loud to herself, saying names of what I come to the conclusion are relatives, and what harm they've caused, or what good, or which one puts a smile on her face. You know, so culturally, we would understand what Aunt so-and-so meant to us. We'd understand what Uncle whoever did to her or him or whatever. So you can understand what caused a post-traumatic syndrome situation in them as well. Just living on a sidewalk with rats and whatever else they have to contend with is enough to make you become mentally ill. So we just got to have some more compassion and understand what's really going on here.
Okay.
And the city needs to understand the dynamics of this situation and create another level of this coordinated entry system where they're pulling people from to be placed.
Yeah, but people see homeless people talking to themselves.
Right.
Mental issues, and they see, some of them participating in violent crimes, hitting people and, you know, and things
like that.
And then you see them just, like, hey, look, I can keep my money and don't pay no light bill, gas bill, don't pay no rent, and, you know, I can use my money. And then there's as you said, there's a lumping culture of drugs and other forms of hustling. Uh-huh. It goes on. It becomes a community.
Uh-huh.
And it creates a problem for people who want to help them.
Uh-huh.
When you start talking about 51... when the sheriff come out for the mentally ill, okay, just one, 50, 51 something.
5150.
Yeah, 5150 where, and then 5250 where, you know, let me put it like this. People in jail really are homeless. You know, they ain't paying no rent. People in prison are homeless, you know.
That's true. You know,
but they just confined. The other people that are homeless, they're free to walk around, do what they want to do, and then come back. So it's all public expense. But, you know, Tori, I just want to tell you, thank you for your presentation. And there's a lot of issues, as you say, all the time in BCCLA meetings. There are a lot of issues that deal with the homeless. It's a diverse population.
Yes.
It's, you know, people, like she got a lot of health issues. We haven't even dealt with COVID amongst the homeless.
Right.
And other forms of viruses and things, because many of them don't go to the hospital, even though they're on Medicare. You know, and then, you know, it's a Medi-Cal. But at the same time, you know, it's an issue. And the same thing with people that rent houses. You know, even if you rent a house or rent an apartment, the landlord has the right to come in and inspect.
Right.
You know, and check, you know, and you know, it's hard for people to grasp that. You know, you see somebody and you love them in your property, and then you inspect it, and they then paint stuff on the wall, mules, all kind of symbolism. And they come in nice, and they come in like they okay, but they have hidden schizophrenia. It comes out sometimes later. And so a lot of people with property say, hey, look, you know, I mean, to rent a property for regular income people, they have to go. Most people turn their property over to rental management.
Right.
And they run it professionally.
Yeah, but even the rental management can't see when there's underlying health issues such as that sometimes. That's why I said if they would just add this component to it where those who are case managers, coordinators, et cetera, would do an advocacy letter to let them know it's been a year. We've never had any violent behavior, any property damage or anything like that. And trust me, within a year, within 6 months, you're going to know that as working with them on a daily basis because they've done some destruction to the hotels. Are they done some destruction to, you know, the place where they stay downtown in a shelter somewhere? You know, you're going to know.
Well, you know, they used to call them, I forget, but they used to sleep on trains.
Transients.
Yeah, and then they used to sleep in at those 24-hour theaters downtown. Skid Row, as they called it. But now it's families. Most of them were single men and single women. But now it's families with kids.
Yeah.
And then they're having kids while they're in homeless.
Well, the pandemic changed a lot of the trajectories that they had before. It changed the dynamics of who's homeless and who's not. And so we just, again, we had to do our part to help resolve the situation and look into why they returning money when they could have easily had a solution and cut that number in half. It makes me wonder, do they want to just keep them homeless and keep it a cycle?
But in New Orleans, Bread Farm and got money meant for the poor to build a stadium for his daughter to play volleyball.
Right. Yeah.
Then there are people here that they get money. And that's why I asked you about those bonds. They don't do what they're supposed to do with the money.
And that's why that judge was sent here, that federal judge.
But the point is, you know, you don't hear about no serious indictments or the judge, you know. It's not the judge by himself. He has to have investigators, accountant, you know, forensic accountant. And these people know how to divert funds and do it legally, you know.
That's right. That's right. But then, believe it or not, they have different oversight mechanisms in place. But we just, I don't see it yet. Because I think that every year, this count should be at least going down by a quarter. But instead, it's rising every year.
Mm-hmm. Well, so make a choice. But I was just going to say this to you, Victoria, and we really appreciate you. Unless there's a burning question, we're going to let Roger Key close us out. if anybody have a burning question. I'm Roger P. Tori.
Yes.
I just want to thank you. You've done more than we could have asked. We deeply appreciate. We ain't going to take up too much of your time because I know you work all day. And you got rest and chill out for a minute because you got
nothing. I'm relaxing now, watching the screen.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your welcome knowledge and your beautiful presentation.
Thank you. Hopefully everyone learns something and feel motivated to participate and to help us make this work, minimize the homelessness.
Yeah. Thank you. Excellent.
Thank you.
So on Wednesday, we have Black LCSW, and the topic is managing emotions, distress, and tolerance. So that's on Wednesday, and it's open to the public, so anybody can join.
Let me see, Wednesday at 6. Oh, I'll be nice if I could show some of the ladies, huh? Managing emotion, distress, and tolerance?
Yes. Yes, open to the public.
Wow.
Just keep the link, and you can share with anybody.
Okay.
Your experience here. And if you have some people that you think we should have on, contact me and let me know.
Oh, I shall. Okay, I will do. Okay. I'm going to listen to the closeout with everyone. And thank you again.
Thank you. So please stay on a minute afterwards, Ms. Bailey, if you can.
I will.
All right, so Conscious Corner and Each One Teach One. Everybody have a good evening.
All right, then.
Good evening.
That's on. Good job.